Brendan and Dom are back on the show, and it is Monday, November 13th. Going to recap the games from last week, do our middle spiel, and give our preview for the games this week. Again, these pods are mostly going to be pretty structured and the same throughout the regular season here as we try to give you guys consistent content to look forward to every week. But let's just get right into it, man. I mean, last week the Wizards played, or they played four games since we last talked. They did play a game last night. But we predicted that the Wizards would lose to the Sixers, split with the Hornets, and then lose to the Nets. We were right. As far as our predictions go this year, I am 8-1, and Damo is 9-0. So we've been pretty spot on so far with our predictions. For the Hornets games, we gave like the win to the home team. Obviously it ended up being different, but I'm going to give us credit on that one. Cause whenever it's a home and home, if we guess 1-1, as long as they go 1-1 in that stretch, I'll give us credit. So right now the Wizards are sitting at 2-7, right?
All right.
And they have some games that this week, obviously, that we'll get into a little bit later. But recapping this past week, the Wizards had their first game this past week against Philadelphia, where Gafford, to start off this game, was like really, really impressive. And then he was blocking Embiid. He was getting him out of he was frustrating Embiid. He was giving him problems. And that comes from, I remember when we had that series against Philadelphia in the playoffs, and we were talking about that being a big talking point whenever that was a few years ago. And, you know, it's one of those things where he's just going to get bullied around by Embiid. But if he can hang with them sometimes, you know, block a couple shots, energize, get him frustrated, some things can happen. So that was exciting to see. But other than that, man, I mean, it's the Sixers. We're the Wizards. There wasn't really much to talk about with that game. And what's frustrating with a lot of these games and the things that go wrong is it's going to be really, really repetitive, which we'll get into here in our middle segment. So we don't have to spend too much time on the games here. But this wasn't one that either of us expected them to really have much of a puncher's chance in.
For sure. There was no... The talent gap is like ridiculous. So, Sixers did what they were supposed to do.
Splitting with the Hornets, like we had predicted. Now, I was a little disappointed. And the reason I was disappointed with the Wizards with these Hornets games is because I really felt like they should have won both of these games and not been 1-1. The second game, Mark Williams was just such a problem. And again, reoccurring theme, sometimes they just don't have answers inside. Like you're relying on Gafford too much to be Rudy Gobert, and he's just not that level of player. And he'll give you some nice blocks and whatnot, but between the foul trouble and his size at times, his quickness, His injuries, you don't know if Gafford's going to play a full game anymore because it seems like every other time he goes down that he's coming up with an ankle injury. So it's just hard to build any consistency down there when you already have those problems and you don't have the personnel on top of that. And, you know, that's why you're going to have games where Mark Williams looks like prime Shaq. And it's because they just don't have enough down there to compete. But I thought despite that the Wizards probably should have won both of those games. But I guess I was happy with the one win that they got, but again, the Hornets are not a better team than them, I would say.
Yeah, I would say it's about even. They're both bad. They're both probably going to be picking top three, top five in the draft. You know, they may not have they may not have the defensive rebounding problems that we have, but they have their share of issues. So they're likely going to be in the basement with us this year. So, but yeah, I felt like they definitely had a chance. The Wizards definitely had a chance to win that second game. I mean, they pretty much controlled the game the whole way through until like the last 5 minutes. They just couldn't secure a rebound, and you know, the lineups. You know, we've talked about this a lot, but they keep playing, you know, bad defenders. Try to close out games, and you know, the results kind of speak for themselves. You know, the shot, all of a sudden the opponents get rhythm and start knocking down threes, and then you couple that with the fact that you can't get defensive rebounds, and you know, a 10-point lead turns into a 10-point deficit and you lose the game. So but yeah, it just, we had them splitting, so you know, it is what it is.
And then yesterday afternoon, they had a game against Brooklyn in which they were kind of getting their teeth kicked in to begin, and then they ended up making it a competitive game and were up at one point in the fourth quarter, but then they just couldn't hang on in the end there. Bilal Coulibaly, career high, 20 points. I think had 3 assists. So it's good to see him have those types of games early and often, because while it's early enough in the season to where the games still matter, and the Nets are not a slouch of a team. So it's not like it was last year's Rockets or whatever in March 21st or whatever. So I didn't think that we were going to see a 20-point game from him this early on in the year, but glad that we were able to. And the one thing now we can transition into more of the player talk, I guess. Again, not really much to recap with these games. But Coulibaly's ability to hit the three, and I'd have to go look at the percentages now after last night's game. I guess I can pull that up now. But he already is, compared to where he was at in summer league, where it's like, oh man, like he might shoot 28% from three this year. But it seems like he can maybe be like a slightly below average 3-point shooter, which you would take, I think, if you were looking at the type of player he was coming into the draft, seeing where he was at in summer league. And it seems like he's made really good progress already, just watching his jumper and the mechanics going back to summer league until now. I think that he's made a lot of progress with the shot, and that's something that's been really encouraging so far, I think, for him.
Yeah, for sure. I always felt like with his jump shot, he had like very easy, repeatable mechanics that transfer well in games. Especially for a guy that's just kind of mostly right now playing in like a catch and shoot role. Mm-hmm. Like his jump shot is kind of tailor made for that. It's a, you know, he's got a wide base, comes straight up and down, shoulder square, got hand in the same spot every time with follow through, and he just lets it rip. And it's, you know, he needs to speed it up, of course, but if it's just off a catch and shoot, like it's going to drop, because like I said, it's an easy, repeatable form. And if guys are going to go under on every screen on him, he's going to knock him down. I think what we're going to start to see is if he's on team scouting report now, and they start pressing on him, how is he going to be able to get that release off quick enough, you know, under the rest? And that's where I think the next growth step for him is going to come. So,
if you had to take a guess right now, unless you already know the numbers, but if you don't and you had to take a guess, what would you say he's shooting from three right now?
I know he been the last probably what 4 games he's been stroking it. So I'm going to say, and it's not on very high volume, so you know, 1 or 2 shots could change his whole percentage. He shot what 4 of 7 yesterday. So I'm going to say on the season, he's probably at, I don't know, 37%.
He's at 41.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So yesterday took him over then.
Yeah, and obviously he's not going to go 4-7 every night. But, I mean, again, I think where we kind of expected him to be, you know, I mean, right now his field goal percentage is 49 and his three-point is essentially 42 because it's 41-9. And his his two-point percentage is 59-1. His effective field goal percentage is 61-3. So, yeah. I mean, as far as shooting splits go, we need to get that free throw up, and it's looked better recently. It's a little flat. But I think he'll get there. I don't think that it's anything that's like overly concerning. But if he can get that free throw percentage up into, you know, maybe by the end of the year, say like 74-ish percent, maybe. I think that that'd probably be really good progress for him. And obviously we've talked about his defensive tools and we just said his offensive game is probably going to take some time. But if you can at least get these shooting splits down right away, and then from there, you're just working on how to break down defenders and read defenses and all that. Yeah, this is he's going to be a problem. I mean, he's already looking like the best prospect we've had since Beal.
Yeah, I think you know, they've given him a very modest role, which has kind of been like, you know, slasher 3-and-D, defender. And at 19, I feel like he's showing them that, you know, he's – That's he can do more than that. Like he can do it. He can do it at a high level. But it's like, okay, all right. You're hitting 40% from three on mostly like catch and shoot threes. You know, you're picking your spots, getting to the rim, making your layups. Not really taking any mid range jumpers. Not really doing much off the dribble. Not really playmaking at all. So it's an easier role, but I think at 19 he's showing that, you know, it's a role that he's really good at. So do you give him more, or do you kind of, you know, keep him in that role for the time being and work on the other stuff in the offseason?
Transitioning from Bilal, and something I want to touch on before we get into any of the other players, but DeLon Wright going down is going to hurt this team, specifically from a defensive perspective, and it just sucks because this is one of the guys that we would probably like to have traded by the trade deadline. And look, it's only an MCL sprain and he's only going to be out for, what did they say, 4 to 6 weeks or whatever. But I mean, that's still something to consider for other GMs and coaching staffs when it comes time to, you know, look at the market, see who's available, because that may be the difference in between you getting an extra second round pick, or instead of getting a second round pick and a player on a rookie contract, you're essentially just swapping salary with someone. You know, that kind of thing does matter, but from an on-court perspective, I mean, they're going to take a hit defensively, and Johnny Davis is a decent defender, but he just doesn't have the offensive game that DeLon Wright has, I don't think, at this point. And Johnny will come along and carve out at least, I think, an 8-9 man role, which is not what you want to see from a number 10 overall pick. But, you know, we were working with what we got. So
just be playable.
Yeah.
Point, man. Like for me at this point now, I'm looking at it as kind of like a sunken cost, but just at least be playable, man. Like, don't, you know, I don't want to see a top 10 pick getting, you know, DMP coach decisions in year 3 and 4. So just be playable.
Yeah, I mean, these are things that we were talking about at the beginning of the year, and I don't know how many times. And maybe, I don't know, maybe the Wizards front office and coaching staff know something that we don't know. But from the outside looking in, and we've said this several times, like, I don't know how much more you're going to learn about guys like DeLon Wright and Tyus Jones by just playing them out there. And I think especially in the case of Tyus Jones, you're making it worse just because of the backcourt that Wes has been rolling with. And it's just like, I don't know why they just don't try looking to the future. And I get that they may be trying to do that in a sense because they want to build up value for guys, and then they'll just play all the young guys after the deadline, or maybe before, if guys get shipped out before them. But again, like Johnny Davis, you have Landry Shamet playing over him and DeLon Wright, and it's like, I just don't understand the thought process behind some of the stuff that Wes does. But the DeLon injury does give Johnny a chance to, you know, play some meaningful minutes and make an impact on this team, specifically on the defensive end of the floor, which we know is what we really need. So, I mean, what do you make of the DeLon injury and what it may mean in the short term and longer term, meaning as we get closer to the trade deadline?
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be, you know, opportunity for some minutes because DeLon was a super impactful player for this team, has been really since he's been here, especially on the defensive end. So there's an opportunity there for a guard to get some minutes to come in and play some defense and be a disruptor, and you'll be on the court. But, yeah, it's looking right now, it might actually end up being, you know, more of an opportunity for Landry Shamet than anything else, which I would have never guessed coming into this year. But Shamet, to me, has been impressive. So, you know, if you're playing well, I feel like this is the NBA. You should be rewarded with playing time if you're playing well. So that's where I'm at with it. But as far as his trade value with DeLon, it's, you know, he's kind of been injury prone at now, right? Like, I mean, he's seemed like every year it's a major injury at this point, which is kind of to be expected with his age. So, again, I go back to, like, what type of value are we expecting from these vets who are kind of career backup journeymen? And now you're looking at some of their ages, the injury history. You're just not going to get much for them. So if you're playing them, you're playing them with the intention to try to win games. You're not playing them thinking that you're going to somehow turn second-round value into first-round value. That's just not going to happen.
Yeah, no, I mean, it definitely was. And I just, you know, with everything that's going on with this team, and we know that we were going to probably try and pawn some of these guys off for pretty much whatever you can get. It just sucks that he's going to miss some time now, because, again, that could be the difference in between getting a quality young piece on a rookie deal that you may or may not be able to work with. You know, like maybe like a Johnny Davis level player, hopefully a little bit better. But and then the difference between that and, you know, Chetty Osman. So, anyway, Jordan Poole and Tyus Jones talk about it a lot, but we still got to talk about it. I don't understand, like, when Wes is going to make this change to switch something up. I thought that maybe something would have went off in his head after that first Hornets game. You know, I mean, that was the game where he benched basically Tyus and DeLon for like what felt like almost the entire second half. They really didn't see a lot of action, and it was mostly DeLon, Koulibaly, Denny that were leading this comeback, and it was a formula that worked. Guys were playing defense, getting out, and getting in transition. You know, that's kind of the name of the game. That's kind of what this team needs to be able to do. It needs to be their identity if they want to stay in basketball games, and they keep going towards these small offensive guards who at times can't even offense at a good rate. I mean, at the end of the game, we talk about the late game struggles. Are the only person to me that, like, I feel comfortable with late game getting a shot in ISO situation is Kuzma. And even that's iffy. And it's not so much like a dig on Kuzma. It's just because we don't have much of anything else. So guy, it's easier for teams to key on him. And I like Jordan Poole's skill set. He's extremely skilled with the basketball. But he's just lightweight. Like, at the end of the game, when you're ISO'd up against Jaylen Brown, Mikal Bridges, you know, Derek White, even Drew Holiday, as we've seen. And I know that these are some of the best defenders in the league, but these are the guys that you're going to be seeing at the end of the game when teams know that you're going to be the number one, number two scoring option. So there is no, you know, well, they're some of the best defenders. There's no one else for them to key on. Well, it doesn't matter. Like, if you're trying to be the number one guy, then you're going to have to take the number one defender most of the time. And at some point, you're going to have to perform. And that doesn't mean running into guys, going on the ground and turning the ball over, or throwing the ball to the other team, or not being forced into a bad shot because you can't break down a defender properly. And Tyus is a little bit more self-aware, and he's mostly just catch and shoot, or he's going to drive and give you a floater or alley-oop it at the rim. That's pretty much the extent of what his game is. But, and JP's, you know, still young, and I'm not, we're not out on him. I'm not, it's not what I'm saying, But just the early returns are very frustrating. And I don't think that it's all their fault. I think that Wes at some point has got to look at this, as we've been saying now, since before the season started, since the offseason, and we knew that this is what they were going to do, but why are you doing it? To me, this is not helping Tyus's trade value. This is hurting it, because the same numbers that people were posting on Twitter about how bad that defensive duo is, all these other NBA front office teams, analytics teams, they have access to the same thing, and they're looking at the same thing, attack these two.
Yeah, the game plan is very simple. Like, you come out, find Tyus Jones and Jordan Poole. Like, very, very simple. Get them on the switch and go get a bucket, man. Because, yeah, I mean, they as a pairing, it's just not going to work. You're talking about, you know, Poole is 6'4", but like I said before, he's maybe 180 pounds soaking wet. And you see how easily he kind of gets knocked off his path. Right. So unless he's crossing you up or blowing by you off the first step, it's kind of easy to recover on him because, you know, you can just nudge him a little bit and he's flying across the damn court. Right. And then Ty Jones just doesn't have the athleticism to really do much of anything. Like, he's not breaking guys down and getting into the depths of the defense and making plays with the ball. He's not trying to really score it. He's kind of just kind of deferring and giving it up. So, you know, you're not really guarding him on that end. And then, like I said, on the defensive end, they both barbecue chicken. So having them both out there together, it's not helping either one of them. Like, Jordan Poole, the best version of Jordan Poole we saw when Steph Curry wasn't playing, and he was the lead guard playing alongside Klay Thompson, Andrew Wiggins, Draymond, Kevin Looney. Draymond and Looney being bigs that can screen, right? We don't really have a big that can screen here that can kind of makes up for Jordan Poole being kind of slight of build. If he can get that screen, give him space, and now he can dance. Now he can get to the little pull-up, the spin move, the little jelly lay. He can get to that because his defender has been screened off. You ain't really getting that hit. Now he got to create it from nothing, from absolutely nothing. And it's been an adjustment, so... You know, the advanced numbers on it are just staggering. Like, basically, when those two are on the court, we are like the worst team in the NBA. When those two are off the court, we got a better net rating than the Celtics and the Nuggets and the Sixers. So that's how, I mean, obviously there's context at play with that, because a lot of times when they're off the court, we're going against second units. But some of it, we've seen it in real time. Like this game here, we had a lead, you know, against the Nets, and then Poole Tyus pairing comes back in, we blow the lead. You know, the Charlotte game, the second game, we had a lead, they put that backcourt in, we blow the lead. The first Charlotte game, we were getting blown out, we put the reserves in against the starters, we come back and we win. You know, defense on the defensive end, so. It's playing out in real, like the advanced numbers are matching the eye test. It's just a matter of what is this front office goals? What is this head coaching staff trying to accomplish? And I think sometimes that doesn't always align with what the numbers are saying.
And it's just like, how many years do we have to, it just sucks, man, because like how many times have we said that Wes has literally the easiest coaching job in the world this year? Like, there, if he just plays the right guys and gives the young guys minutes, we do not care about results. We are not, as you've noticed so far throughout the season, and I feel like this is most Wizards fans' perspective and thoughts and whatnot, we are not getting on here attacking the guys for losing games. Don't care. We are complaining about lineups, and we want the young guys to get some minutes, and if we feel like some of the younger guys have proven that maybe they should get some minutes over some of the vets on the team, then they should at least experiment with that. Like Eugene Omorui, for example, was doing really good in garbage time, and then they put him out in real time against an NBA team, and he just looked like he didn't belong. So, I mean, and I'm not saying he shouldn't get any more opportunities. I'm just saying, like, that should be the thought process. And everything has just been so ass backwards so far, where there's still this veteran prioritization for whatever reason. And unless Gallinari is going for 18, 20 points on some ridiculous shooting, then he's just useless. Like, why are you playing him? At least Muscala can move a little bit better and he gives you some size. What is the point of playing Gallinari with DeLon Wray? You have Johnny Davis and Ryan Rollins. You could be playing either of those guys. Why aren't we doing that? Like, you could start Bilal Coulibaly, your first round pick, put Tyus Jones to the bench. Why aren't we doing that? Like, this is things that we've been harping on for a while, and the Wizards are still not seeing results from the way that they're choosing to do it. And again, I hate to get on here and say that the fans know more than coaching staffs and front offices and whatnot, but it's like, I mean, come on. I mean, some of this stuff just seems kind of obvious, and something's got to give at some point. I'm sure they'll make a change eventually. It's just a matter of when, because it's like we would have already liked to see it by now, I think.
Yeah, I just think, you know, it's one of the things with Wes, man. I just feel like you're going to kind of always be behind the eight ball. You're going to be late on stuff, late on rotations, late on timeouts, late on adjustments. He's just going to be late. And I don't know why that is, but, you know, right now he's helping the tank. So we need it. We need more talent. And, you know, right now losing games is going to be our best pathway to acquiring that talent. So, keep doing what you're doing, Wes.
Any thoughts on any of the other players, Kispert, Denny, anyone in general?
I don't want to see Denny shoot 8 threes no more. I feel like he kind of got baited into that by the Nets. They were just leaving him. And instead of attacking the rim, playing 6'9", he kind of fell back into them old habits of just camping out at the 3-point line. And I don't think that helps the team. I would rather him trying to get 8 free throw attempts than 8 threes. So hopefully this Toronto game he reverts back to the guy we saw before yesterday. Let me see. Kispert was just his normal self. Trying to think who else. Bilal, I already said he had an amazing game. That was pretty much it. I like the Shamit at point guard minutes. I thought he was pretty damn good at it. You know, he had one play where he just attacked the defender and went to like a turnaround mid-range pull-up. I like having that dimension from a guy playing at the lead guard spot. So I would like to see more of it.
All right, man, let's get into it for our games this week. Tonight, as you mentioned, we are at Toronto, right? Yes, we are at Toronto. We're going to give this one a L or a W. I'll let you give your predictions first this week.
It's an L.
I agree. They really struggled with them in preseason, and I don't think that that was just preseason. I think that that was a legit struggle with the size that Toronto throws out there.
Yeah, and it's a back-to-back on the road.
Yeah. Wednesday night, we are home against Luka Doncic, Kyrie Irving, and the Dallas Mavericks. That is going to be an L for me. I know I said I would let you predict first, but oh well.
This one, they actually have a shot. This one's on the road, too?
This one's home.
This one's home, yeah. This one, they actually have a shot because of just the style that the Mavs play. Like, it's very heliocentric basketball with Luka and Kyrie just taking turns going at it, and they don't really guard. So this one of them games where, like, if Jordan Poole and Kuzma get hot and, you know, like, Kispert gets hot from three, it could be a, you know, 130-120 type situation. And it could be closer than what, you know, probably the records say it should be. I feel like I want to go W here, man.
Well, if you want to keep your perfect record, because right now you're at 9-0 on your prediction. So is that the game you want to potentially ruin that on here?
Oh, man. You know what? I'm going to stick with my head, man. I'm going to say this is an L2.
All right. Friday night, we have, this is a 3-game homestand, so we have the, but the Bucks will cover next week. But we have the New York Knicks on Friday night to end the week.
That's an L.
I agree.
They're just gonna be too physical. They're the best rebounding team in the NBA. It's their biggest strength versus our biggest weakness. They're gonna destroy us on the glass, man.
Yeah.
That's one of them games where the Knicks might shoot 30% from the field and still win by 20.
Well, and anyone could honestly do that against us, just because, again, we don't have much of an inside presence. The wings and stuff still aren't the best about trying to find a guy to box out. And you know, the guards certainly don't really make much of an effort to rebound or can't. So, I mean, it's probably going to be another winless week. Anything else you want to add before we cut this one?
Nah, so I mean, with our predictions, that would put them at what? 2-10. 2-10. Yeah, that sounds about right, man. That sounds about right. 2-10.
Well, we'll see. Hopefully they go out there and win all three of them. You know, I mean, I certainly root for them. I try not to get too irritated by the lack of wins, because, again, we knew what type of year this was going to be. But certainly I think it doesn't hurt to go ahead and have them win. You know, they've already chosen their direction. They've rebooted the franchise, so to speak. So it doesn't really bother me. I root for wins, just don't expect them. But all right, that's going to do it for us today, guys. Appreciate you all listening and tuning in. We'll probably try and do a space Wednesday as usual, right? So that would be the Dallas game. Good for that?
Sounds good to me.
Okay, so we'll be back with you guys Wednesday for our weekly X space during the week. If you guys are already subscribed to the pod, please make sure that you are. Rate us 5 stars, leave us a kind review. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.